Making an estimate often includes the ability to make a judgment about how accurate that estimate may be. And so we use a concept called statistical intervals about our estimates. And it provides a range over where the real value, the parameter, may actually lie. So let's talk about point estimates in particular with their confidence intervals. And it's a pretty basic concept, but it has a few elements that you need to wrestle with a little bit to fully master. So confidence intervals often come with the terms of confidence. What's our confidence of or range of where the true value may lie? Or how confident are we in the results? So it mixes a little bit of the common term English term for confidence, being assured or certain of something. If you're very, very certain of it, you're very confident, for example. On the other hand, it's a statistical term. It's given us that we're using a random sample from a population, and we want to make an inference about that population. So it's, well, how well does the sample represent the population? So it's how well does our subset give us information that is true about the total population? That's what we're really talking about here. So the basic idea of a confidence interval is that it's a range of where the true value may reside. Let's see if I can get my pen up here. So let's say I have this yellow arrow in the middle of this blue line, so say lengths of or whatever it is I'm measuring, is where the unknown true value lies. So that might be 2 centimeters. That's the actual mean value for the population of the lengths of something that I'm measuring, say a knob diameter. And I only have a sample, and I want to be 90%, or let's say 80% confident that the true value is within a particular range when I am trying to interpret the results of my sample. Now, the sample value may well be at some other location. It's rarely right on the true value of the parameter. But let's say I want a 80% confident range or bound. And so I get this width that gives me an idea that the true value is likely within that range. And likewise, there's a 20, if I use this as an 80%, then there's a 20% chance that it's outside. Now, what I don't know is that if it's inside or outside, it's just that I have a relatively smaller chance that it's outside this range. So I may be interested in using a higher confidence, let's say 90%, so that I have a 1 in 10 chance that my sample is misleading me about what the true value is. So I get another estimate from my sample, and I get a slightly bigger range of my confidence interval. So the range value between A and B is now going up. The distance between the edges go up. Now, in part, it's because I'm saying that the true value based on my sample size, now I'm using the same sample size in each of these examples, is within my bounds with 90% confidence. Now, if I go to 95%, you get bigger, and 99%, it gets even bigger. But what we're saying is that for a given sample size, the chance that my true value lies within this range, it requires then the range to get bigger in order for that statement to be true. So it's not really saying much about how accurate our data is. It's just saying that if you want a very small confidence bound for your sample size, then you need a lot of samples. So as I increase my samples, the confidence bound will get smaller and smaller. So if I'm only at 90% confidence and I have a range like that, and my lower bound is crosses this point where I have to make a decision, I may say, well, what happens if I increase my sample size? Well, that'll narrow, given everything else is constant, it'll narrow the confidence intervals for the same confidence. So the confidence interval is in part due to the size of it is due to the variability of the population you're dealing with. It's in part the sample size. And then it's also in part what's the risk you're willing to take, the value of your confidence. So the true value isn't moving. It is what it is for that particular population. Most often we don't know what it is. That's why we're doing sampling to get an estimate. And so the more samples, the better. I can have a higher confidence and a smaller confidence interval. But in many cases, I can have a significant amount of risk, a lower confidence, that my sample is misrepresenting the true situation. And what that means is that even with, say, a 90% confidence, the estimate I get might be over here. There's a 1 in 10 chance with a 90% confidence that the true value doesn't lie within the confidence interval. So if I take 10 samples from a population, I will get, I'll get one that's out, but then I'll get 10 that do include the true value. They may vary in where they're actually located, but if I repeat the sampling from a population, I will get a different estimate each time of what the mean value is, for example, and I'll get a representative confidence interval around it. But 1 in 10 times, it will not include the true value. The trouble is we don't know which of our samples of repeated readings of our population or our single time that we'd usually do a sample includes the true value or not. So one of the ideas is to say, well, I want a high confidence that my range, my sample is going to be near the true value, the parameter's value. But if I go to 99% confidence, it just makes the confidence intervals bigger. So it has a higher probability of actually including the true value. But there still is that 1 in 100 chance that it doesn't. Doesn't eliminate the possibility that our random sample does not include, or the generated confidence bound does not include the true parameter value. And so the higher the value is for a similar sample size, the bigger the intervals are. And it, all that does is allows us to be more often do we include the true value. It just takes a bigger swipe at the range of values where it could be. Short of testing everything and getting 100% sample, which is measuring the population, we'll never really know if our sample is representative of the population. The more samples we have, the higher confidence we have, will help us in those cases to make sure that we're somewhere close to our true value. Short of that, it's a part of the process in understanding that risk that using a sample to create an inference about a parameter is just part of how that works. All right, so let's say we've got a large data set and we want to calculate the mean, and we've got 200 samples. We calculate the sample mean at 23 and the standard deviation's 4.5. So what's a 95% confidence interval about that mean? Well, it's actually pretty straightforward. There's a simple formula that says Here's the probability. This is my confidence term. This Z alpha over 2 is a two-sided confidence interval. You can see it by the confidence, the C equals 1 minus alpha. And since we're dividing alpha by 2, it's a little bit on each side. It's that probability and that probability on a standard normal curve that allows us then to calculate the number of standard deviations away that we want to include within our confidence interval. So basically we're saying is that the C here is our 95% of our distribution is in that area. And so if we know that we have a large data set and or we know it's a normal distribution, then the Z table works out pretty well. Now, oftentimes we need to use, because we're dealing with sample means, we tend to use a t-test or a t-value here to account for that it's a sample with unknown population parameters. But in this particular case, we have the population standard deviation, so we don't have to make that correction. And so sigma square root of n, this should look familiar as the standard error term. And so I get some number of z's, of these standard deviations times my standard error, and it gives me the range. I should probably change the color on this. It gives me the range of where I would expect the true mean to actually fall with a 95% confidence. So kind of drew all over this one, but I think you get the idea. Mostly this is a refresher, right? Now, if I'm using Z, I know the population standard deviation. Now, it always begs the question, if you know the population standard deviation, you've made the measurements in the entire population, why not calculate the population mean directly? Well, there are cases where I have, say, months and months and months of samples, and my standard deviation term is fairly consistent at 4.5. In those cases where I have a lot of previous data and I know what my standard deviation is, then I can tally up all of those previous readings to get a very high confidence to a very small confidence interval that then allows me to say, I have very high confidence that my true population is at 4.5. Now, technically, it's still just a sample unless I measure everything in the population. But in some of those circumstances, when we have a long-standing, steady value for standard deviation, we can consider it a population parameter. But when in doubt, use the T value instead of the Z value. Now, when I have a very large number of samples, then it's kind of a moot point. The Z and the T will give you almost exactly the same values. So a couple different scenarios there when you're using the Z or T as your as the key part of your confidence interval calculation. Right? But now, on the other hand, if, like I mentioned, is use the T statistic when you have a small sample. Usually under 30 is the way it works. So in this case, if you work out the numbers, I'm going to get a slightly smaller value. So this is T alpha over 2. Its T is 0.05 is 1 minus, minus C. Divide that by 2, so it's going to be 0.025 into the tables. And then n minus 1 is 19. It's the 20 minus 1. Enter the tables with the 0.025 and sample size, or the degrees of freedom of 19, and you should find a value of 2.093. So that's this term. I've got the 4.5 here, square root of 20. Calculate that out. And if you're following along and working the examples, you could pause this, work it out, and what I get is a 20.9 to 25.1. And of course, I lose my screen here. Let me see if I can get, bring it back. 25.1 is the confidence interval. Now, in the previous one, let me jot down the answer here. If you work out the numbers on this, the Z table is this alpha over 2, which is 0.05 divided by 2, 0.025. It's both sides of the two-sided confidence interval, but because it's symmetric, we really only need the one value. And this is equal to 1.96. So a little bit less than 2, whereas the t-value is 2 point and a little bit extra. So in this case, I work out a calculation of 22.38 to 23.62. So that's a little bit smaller than what we saw with the t-test. Now, in part, it's because I've got 200 samples, and in part, it's because I'm using the z-value rather than the t-value, which will always be just a little bit bigger. Now, with 200 samples, the two values are, the difference is going to be in the fifth, sixth, or seventh decimal point, so it won't really matter. But if I have to make that correction for not knowing my standard deviation, this actually should be an S, for a sample standard deviation, then I'm going to end up with a slightly larger confidence interval. Okay. Now you can also do these around variances. It's a slightly different formula. And here I've got an example where we have a handful of samples and we want a 90% confidence interval. But the formula is for variance, which is sigma squared, is what in our actual value we're calculating is the sample variance, so S squared. And I'm going to use a chi-squared distribution. And it's just a slightly different table. I calculate the two sides of the chi-squared. Because it's not symmetrical, you're going to need to find both values. One at the lower end of the distribution, chi-squared is really skewed. One at the lower end and one at the upper end. And so one of them is the upper tail and the lower tail. So hence you got the alpha over 2 and the 1 minus alpha over 2 representing the two sides, two different tails that I'm trying to calculate. The other part is the degrees of freedom, which is n minus 1, which in this case is 24 in both cases. So, and again, spot where if you want to calculate this, go ahead and pause it, run your calculation out, and then see what you get. What I got was 30.97 to 81.4744. Right? Because it's not a symmetrical distribution, the confidence interval may not be symmetrical about the value. Right? Doesn't always have to be. It's a good thing to keep in mind with confidence intervals. But we can also do this with proportions, as we were talking about earlier, of all the different things we can calculate. And when we were talking about confidence or control charts, we talked about proportions. This idea of NP and the number of units and the proportion or the percentage chance of something occurring, this NP values. Now, we can use a normal approximation to get this confidence interval. That's what the Z alpha over 2 is for a two-sided confidence interval, but only when we meet this condition. That is that the number of units and its probability and the 1 minus that value are both greater than 5. Then we can use the normal distribution as an approximate for it. In some textbooks, you'll see it is that you need to be greater than or equal to 10. It's just a little bit more conservative in before using the approximation. Now, of course, if the underlying data is fairly normally distributed, you can use the normal distribution directly. And I typically recommend if you're making measurements, say width or dimension or some kind of dimensional reading, use those readings as the variables data and work with the normal or t-test for the confidence interval. But in this case, we're taking a look at different bolts, for example, and looking for defective bolts. It may be something that doesn't really lend itself to a variables type measurement. It might be discoloration or damaged threads or things like that. So in this case, we've got 23 out of 150 are bad. We can calculate that proportion directly. But then we need to put a confidence interval around that. So when I meet this criteria, then I can calculate the confidence intervals using this formula. So Z alpha over 2, it's back to the normal table. I've got a 90% confidence interval. So it's 0.1 divided by 2, just equals to 0.05. And that ends up being 1.645 out of the table. That's this term. P value is 23 out of 150 in both cases, and N is the 150 in my lot. Take square root of that, run out some calculations. You can pause here, run those calculations out. And what I get is that the proportion defective with a 90% confidence based on this sample, which had 23 failures, defective bolts in it, is 0.1236, and use the notation here, 0.153, which is the 23 divided by 150, up to, it could be as high as 0.1824. So let me know if you're getting the right answers on each of these quick examples. But there's just here, we've got mean variance, a mean based on a small sample set. So we use a T distribution and a number of different, or an invariance term. And so we've got a number of different, slightly different confidence interval calculations. Now, one way you can use these confidence intervals is to solve for N. What's the sample size that will give you a specific range for your confidence interval? I want to take enough samples to know that my true mean is above 100. Well, how many samples do I need to take? Well, I need to know the variation part, the variance term or standard deviation term. I've got confidence, and I can probably back calculate out how many samples I need to take such that my lower bound is at a certain level or above, and so on. So there's a number of ways you can use this set of information, set of formulas, I should say. So keep in mind that the basic idea of confidence is that my sample is true to where the true population is. So the sample doesn't always have to be. And the chance that it's misleading, if I take samples that are all on the lower end of the distribution, just by chance, which has a finite probability of occurring, is based on that confidence interval. And so if I have a 90% confidence, that means that 1 in 10 times that I do an experiment like this, the answer I get will be either too low or too high compared to what the actual value of the unknown distribution really is. So when we're talking about confidence, we're talking on the risk that our sample is lying to us. Next, we'll talk about putting some of these intervals around those MTBF estimates.